Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Mishnah's daf Dalad. We're in Gimel Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf will be learned with Zeichen Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We are talking about Daryavesh. The discussion revolves around Daryavesh, and the reason why we moved to that discussion is because we are still in the first point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us that there are Rosh Hashanim, that there are four Rosh Hashanahs, four times a year where things restart and start anew. And when it comes to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so we get to the first day of Nisan, so that's a Rosh Hashanah, that's the first. That's the first for what? So the Mishnah makes 2 points. We're still only on the first of the 2 points, and that's Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim. It's the first for kings, and that means that every time a king, after being coronated, hits a first day of Nisan, that's now the next year of his kingdom. And why is that important to note? It's not important for the king to note. That's important, I guess, for history, but in terms of practical living, it's important because when we write our documents, so we dated it based on the kings, and we need to know with clarity what year is it to that particular king. And once it can be established that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is now the next year of his reign, so now for that entire year, it's a year of that king. It's the fourth year of that king. It's the fifth year of that king. So when writing any type of note, any type of IOU, so we're going to be writing it relative to the year of that king. We all know which year it is because it's all established the Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And so therefore we have full clarity, and therefore we will know whether or not the note is either written on time, predated, or postdated. And the Mishnah Shviya says that if you have a predated document is possible. Okay. Then as we moved along, we moved on to Daf Gimel. So we made a very important distinction between the kings of the Jews versus the kings of the Umbas HaOlam. When we talk about kings of the Jews, so their kingdom renews on the first day of Nisan. This entire discussion of Rosh Chodesh Nisan being Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim is only for Malchi Yisrael. But when it comes to Malchi Umbas HaOlam, so they don't go by Nisan, they go by Tishrei. Okay, that was an important distinction made by Rav Chisda. The problem with that distinction was Daryavesh. Now, Daryavesh was the fourth of the Persian kings. Now, as I mentioned, I count four Persian kings. That is up for controversy. That's up for debate. It's not clear that there are four Persian kings, but we're going to go with Seder Olam. We're going to go with our traditional viewpoint, and that is that there are four Persian kings. It starts off with Darius the Mede, Daryavesh Hamadai. Then it goes to Koresh. Then Daryavesh and Koresh, by the way, collectively only ruled for 4 years. Right? It was short-lived. Then Achashverosh. And then after Achashverosh, so then it was Daryavesh. We have Midrashim that tell us that Daryavesh, the fourth of the kings, was a son of Esther. Not only do we have Midrashim who say so, but you can even look on today's daf, or I should say rather yesterday's daf, and you can see that Tosos follows this position as well. So, okay, so anyway, be that as it may, the fourth of the kings of the Persian kings is Daryavesh, and he allowed the Jews to rebuild the second temple. Now, he wasn't the first Persian king to do so. The first Persian king to do so goes back to Koresh. But Koresh allowed the starting of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and then stopped the building somewhere in the middle. So then we go through the entire kingdom of Achashverosh, and then we head to Daryavesh, and Daryavesh allowed the building of the Beis HaMikdash. When did he allow the building of the Beis HaMikdash? So somewhere in the 6th or 7th reign of the rule of Daryavesh. In the 20th year of his reign, we did all this yesterday, in the 20th year of Daryavesh's reign, so the Jewish situation was terrible, despite the fact that they just built the Second Temple. But the poverty in Israel was terrible. The Beis HaMikdash was built, but not well. And so a letter was sent to Daryavesh in his 20th year, and that's what we spoke about yesterday. At the time, serving Daryavesh was Nehemiah. Nehemiah was still living in Bavel, was still living in Shushan, and was attending to the Persian king at the time, Daryavesh. And basically, Nehemiah came in. We did this yesterday. Nehemiah came in with the news that things are doing terrible in Yerushalayim. He went over to the Persian king, and the Persian king says, "You look terrible." So he explained to him, "Yeah, it looks so bad because the Jews in Israel are doing terrible, Yerushalayim is doing terrible." And so the king gave permission for Nehemiah to go back out to Eretz Yisrael and to help the Jewish people. Okay, So all that we saw yesterday. The problem that we encountered yesterday is that when looking at Daryavesh, we noted that we had a series of psukim in Sefer Ezra where we went from the month of Adar to the month of Av, which means that we went from Chodesh HaChamishi, we went from Av, which was considered the seventh year of King Daryavesh, and we, let me say this right, Shashvi Lamelech, no, okay. Mesiv Rav Yosef. Let's start it again. That way, I'll get it clear. Okay, we're on Gimel Amud Beis. We're taking a short step backwards. We're going to go back to the question of Rav Yosef. Again, the problem is going to be is that we just established, Rav Chista established, that when it comes to kings of the Umas HaOlam, so they don't go by Nisan, they go by Tishrei. So Mesiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is bothered by the following question. Everyone see, we're about 10 lines from the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. But Yom Esrim V'Arba L'Chodesh Bashishi Bishna Shtayim L'Daryavesh Uksiv Bashvi'i Be'esrim Be'echad L'Chodesh. So the Gemara so Rav Yosef quotes the Pesukim. So one Pesuk says that we're in the Shnas Shtayim L'Daryavesh. And then we're in the seventh month, which means that we're in the month of Tishrei. And Be'esrim Be'echad L'Chodesh V'imisa Bishvi'i Bishnat Gimel Mi'Ba'ilei. Now, once you're in the seventh month, so now you're in Tishrei. So again, Daryavesh is a non-Jewish king. So, which, by the way, is interesting, because if the Medrash is right, and Tosfos is right, and he's the son of Esther, so he's not a non-Jewish king. He's actually a Jewish king. But I'm not sure if that question really bothers me, because although he may be Jewish, but he's a king of the Persian Empire. So, meaning, not that he's not right with, not that he's not Jewish, but he represents the Persian Empire. So, his actual Jewishness may not affect this particular halacha. But anyway, so the Gemara says, so now we're in the month of Tishrei, so once we're in the month of Tishrei, we should now be in the third year, not still in the second year. So the Gemara gives an interesting answer, which is he's Melech Kasher, meaning he's a good king. He allowed the building of the second temple. And because he's a good king, so therefore, he doesn't go after the month of Tishrei, he goes on the month of Nisan. He turns on the month of Nisan. So the Gemara says, wow, that's really difficult. Why is that really difficult? Because consider the following. We are now going to quote other Pesukim and Sefer Ezra. V'sheitzi beisa dana ayom tlas eliyerech adar dihishnas shis lamachus dayavesh maka. So we are in the month of Adar, the end of the month of Adar. Third day of the Adar, and we are in the sixth year of Daryavish's rule. Okay, Vitanya, Ba'osos, Malashanaba, Allah Ezra Mibavo. Now, a full year later, Ezra goes up to Eretz Yisrael. So by the way, just to get the timeline somewhat clear, Ezra goes up in the sixth year of Daryavish's rule, or I should say better, in the seventh year. And Nehemiah doesn't go until another 13 years later, in the 20th year. So Ezra and Nehemiah, so really it's in waves. Ezra is one wave, and then Nehemiah is a wave later on. Now they arrive. Now remember, we have Ezra being in Bavel in the sixth year of Daryavish's rule, in the month of Adar, okay, which is only 1 month away, removed from Nisan, not even 27 days removed from Nisan. And now we're going to go to the fifth month of the year. So the fifth month of the year, now we are all the way in, where are we? We're in fifth month of the year is Av. So the Gemara says, Hishnas HaShvi'is L'melech, and it's the seventh year of Daryavish's rule. So we went from Adar, we crossed a Nisan, and we're in the seventh year. So V'imisa Hishnas HaShmini'is Mi'Ba'ilei. Now remember, Ezra didn't go until a full year later. So really, we crossed now not one Nisan, but we crossed actually two Nisans. So now, we have a problem. Because if we're crossing two Nisans, so it shouldn't be the seventh year, it should be the eighth year. So the Gemara says, and furthermore, just as a technical problem, but it's in a pretty important technical problem, Why we're talking about Daryavish, you're talking about Koresh. So the Gemara says, well, that's not it. Leave that technical problem aside. The Gemara says, who Koresh, who Daryavish, who Artachshasta. The Gemara says he goes by all three names. So Koresh Shemalach Kasher Ayah, Koresh because he was Kasher. But like we said yesterday, take the letters, mix them around. And then Artachshasta, Al-Shem, Achuso. Every king of Persia was referred to as Artachshasta. That was just simply a generic name for the king, like Paro and Mitzrayim. Umashmo Daryavishmo, and his actual name was Daryavish. Okay. Anyway, Mikomakom Kasha, but still it creates a difficulty. Because two Nisans go by, we are saying that Koresh slash Daryavish slash Artachshasta is a Melech Kasher. We are saying that he's counted like the Jewish kings, like in the month of Nisan. So if he's in the sixth year and two Nisans go by, so that should be the eighth year, not the seventh year. So Am Rav Yitzchak lo kasha kan kum shehichmitz kan la'acha shehichmitz. So Rav Yitzchak now has a thesis. And his thesis basically is the following. Daryavish started off as a great king, allowing the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the second temple. Fantastic. And he was, and for a while, he went whenever they were counting his kingdom, they counted by the month of Nisan, not by the month of Tishrei. They accorded him the status of a king of Israel. And then he soured. And because he soured, so then we move back to Tishrei. Now we pointed out yesterday, all this is really difficult because if you think about the ultimate goal, why do we care about any of this? So that we can date our documents and that people will know with clarity when exactly the document was dated. And now we're having a non-Jewish king, but we're giving him Jewish status, but then we're removing the Jewish status. So at one point he went by Nisan, then he goes to Tishrei, and I can only imagine the confusion of all the accounts and all the IOUs. So when was this written, huh? So I do understand that, and that does seem to be difficult, but okay, but we move on. And now, really, for a good part of today's daf, we are now in the very bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. We're about to approach Dal Amud Aleph. For a good part of today's daf, we are now going to be discussing how we know. Meaning, we're not just speculating, but we actually know that at one point in time, Daryavish showered. And although we give him a lot of credit, but at the same time, however, at a point in his kingdom, he turned. He soured. How do I know that? So Maskal Rav Kana Mai Umi Hichmetz Vaksiv. So the Gemara says, are you right? He's soured. I beg to differ. And now we're going to go through. We're going to see a lot of Navi today, and we're going to see a lot from Sefer Ezra today. And we're reading in Aramaic. And if you think to yourself, "Oh, I've gone through a little bit of Gemara. I know Aramaic." So the way to know whether or not you know Aramaic is to open up a Sefer Ezra or Sefer Daniel, read inside. If you understand what's going on, so then good. You know Aramaic. I struggle. So my Aramaic is limited, meaning the Gemara Aramaic is good. You don't have to have a good vocabulary to learn Gemara. It's a funny misconception, right? It's a different language. It is, but it's not a whole lot. Open up Sefer Daniel, and you'll see. It's a whole different language. And, okay. So here we go. We're in Sefer Ezra. And Uma Shachan Uvnei Torin V'dichrin V'imrin La'alon La'ela Shemaya Chintin Melech Amar Mashach Kama Amar Kehan Yadai B'Yushalayim Lehu Megayiv Lahom Yom B'Yom Di Lo Shalom. Okay, everyone got that? Okay, good. No. Basically, Daryavish writes in a letter and he says, not only am I going to allow them to build the Beis HaMikdash, but they need operation. Right, we've talked about this back in Masechta Shkalim. So there are two costs. There's capital, right, the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and then there's operating. Right? Any institution, it has those two lines in accounting. So there's capital and there's operations. So when Daryavish says, "Oh, you want to operate the Beis HaMikdash? No problem. I'll provide. I'll donate." And he donates, and that's all. Now you go back to the Psukim, and now you'll see. Now you know the context, you'll be able to better decode the pasuk. Tor, dichrin, bulls, rams, imrin, sheep, to offer as carbonolas. Chintin is chita, that's wheat, salt, wine, oil. Okay, good. Basically, all the supplies necessary to offer carbonos on the base of Mikdash. And he's basically saying, I'm sponsoring. Now, that's very interesting. So you're telling me that Daryavish went through a period of souring, where he was good, but then he turned bad. I don't know. It sounds pretty good. Sponsoring the entire operating cost of the Beis HaMikdash, which, parenthetically, in of itself is a bit of a problem, right? Going back to Masechta Shkalim, meaning those funds have to be what? those have to be collected funds from the Machatzis HaShekel, so that's really public money. And here you have a private entity, i.e. the King of Persia, who's sponsoring the Karbonos in the base of Mikdash, so right, it is a little bit tricky. How does that work exactly? Okay, but anyway, that just I raise it as a side point. So, okay, so Amarli Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Mitunach. Rabbi Yitzchak says, okay, I don't think that's a question. And in fact, if anything, that's the answer. Meaning that very pasuk shows me that he's soured. How does that pasuk show me? Because read on in the pesukim. So here we go back to Sefer Ezra. Dilahon ma'akreve nichochin la'ela shamaya. This is going to be offered to the God up in heaven. Umatzilan lechayim malka uvenohi. And when you offer these karbanos, you know what I want you to have in mind? Have me in mind. And have my children in mind. And so in other words, the only reason why he wanted the karbanos to be offered is for selfish reasons. And that's why he wanted them offered. And again, if anything, these psukim indicate that he wasn't altruistic. And he didn't just want the Beit HaMikdash to be built. But he wanted it for his own selfish benefit. So the Gemara says, "Uman David Hachi." Just give me a moment. Let's just finish the flow. "Uman David Hachi lav ma'yalsehi." So the Gemara says, "That's bad. That's not so bad." V'atani, the Gemara quotes a brisa. We saw this in the beginning of Psachim. Ha omer selazul tzedaka. Let's say a person dedicates money to tzedaka, and b'shul sheyichu bini, and he attaches a condition. Look, my son's really ill. I'm in bad shape. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to give tzedakah on the condition that my son recover from his illness. Or he's a little bit concerned about his position in Olam Haba, so you know what? I'll give money, so I'll pay for a better spot in Olam Haba. Harezeh tzadik amor. So the Brisa says that's great, perfect, tzadik amor. So he's a perfect tzadik. So the Gemara says, we'll go back. We'll explain that better in just a moment. But in the meantime, so now we're judging Daryavesh and we're saying, oh, terrible, terrible king. Look at him offering karbanos in the base of Mikdash so that him and his children will live. Okay, it's not so bad. We could do that. In fact, the Bryce ends off with the word Sadik Amor. Okay, so doesn't say it, now we go back to Daryavesh and we're trying to judge Daryavesh. Doesn't sound so bad. So Lokasha Kambi Sor Kamba Ovdei Kochavim. So the Gemara gives an interesting answer, and the Gemara says, well, when the Braisa that we quoted about giving a seller for tzedakah, that's talking about Yisrael, Masha Ein Kain, we're talking about Ovdei Kochavim, we're talking about a non-Jew, and they're different. Okay, now here we go. They're different. Why are they different? How are they different? So the first place we'll start is with Rashi. Rashi says, do we understand the difference? So Rashi says, yeah. Rashi begins the fourth line down from the top of Rashi. The first narrow line, Rashi writes, Kam be Yisrael, shelibo l'shamayim. When the Jew gives tzedakah, the truth of the matter is that he understands it's a mitzvah. He's giving tzedakah as a mitzvah, period. Now, im mirim lo b'chayav in a koro lo taga. Now, let's say he attaches a condition. Look, my son's not in good shape. I want him to recover. I'm giving tzedakah for that purpose. Okay. And let's say his son doesn't recover. Ain karen lo tagar. He's not going to contest. He's not going to protest. He'll be fine. Okay, in other words, the real reason why he gave the money is tzedakah. He attaches a condition, but he understands that the condition is not connected to the mitzvah. And although HaKadosh Baruch Hu may look favorably upon him because he gave tzedakah, but at the same time, however, it's not automatic, and he understands that. But Ella tola yisurim be'avono. And if God forbid, you know, his condition doesn't get fulfilled, he understands. That's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu's fault. That's my issue. He'll get it. But when the non-Jew gives and he attaches a condition, he really believes that the condition is going to be automatically attached to the mitzvah. And if the condition is not fulfilled, so karen lo tagar. So he's going to contest, he's going to protest. Oh God, where are you? What happened? And he won't understand that the issue is him and not a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the difference between the Yisrael and the Ovdei Kochavim in this particular context. That is Rashi's understanding. Tosus over here asks a question. It's a basic question. We should all be sitting on this question, and that is one of the first Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos. One of the first Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos tells us how we should serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What kind of attitude do we have when we serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu? So, I picked up the wrong sitter. Right? Don't Siddurim have a Pirkei Avos right after Mincha on Shabbos? Yeah. Okay. Not every sitter. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Not every Ashkenaz. I won't name names, but some do. There is a minhag. There's an old minhag amongst the Ashkenazim to learn the Pirkei Avos between Pesach and Shavuos.
No, I'm saying, are they doing it right now?
Do they formally do it? No. No, I visited other shuls where it's like formally done, meaning mincha is over, and then they sit and they learn the parak of Pirkei Avos. In this particular shul, they don't. Huh? Yeah. Okay. They were right. He does have it. Okay. Okay. I really appreciate it. Just looking in the wrong places. Okay. I guess I'm more comfortable with the sitter. Either way. Okay. Antignas Yishochel Kibol Mishimon Tzadik. So we have the Mishnahs and Pirkei Avos. So we're in the third Mishnah, the first parak of Pirkei Avos. So we're up to Antignas Yishochel, and he has a tradition from Shimon Tzadik. And who are your Omer? And he would say the following: Al to you, Kavadim Amisham Shemasarav, Amenasa Kabel Pras. Don't be like those servants who serve their master so that they can get a reward. Ela Havu Kavadim Amisham Shemasarav, Shelo Amenasa Kabel Pras. But when you serve your master, so expect no reward. Meaning you serve your master simply because it's the right thing to do, and don't expect a reward to come out. And then the Mishnah finishes off: Ehimar Shemaim Aleichem. The fear of God should be upon you. So Tosfos over here is bothered. The first Tosfos on the Amud. Right now we could all take a look at inside. So Tosfos says, we just learned in our Gemara that if you give tzedakah with a condition, and the condition is, I really want my son to recover from his illness, so you are tzedak gomer. Tzedak gomer, that's high praise. Even though you're doing a mitzvah with the expectation that you're going to get some sort of reward. And now we just learned in Rashi. Now if the reward doesn't come, you're not going to be... You're not going to ask for your money back. But still, though, that's the attitude. The attitude seems strange. So Tosfos over here is bothered. So had the number perakam of the Maseches Avos al to you kava dimasham shemasarav amenasa kaba pras hainu beumos haolam shetoim aluishonos. So Tosfos over here says very similar to what Rashi is saying, is that when the Mishnah says that your attitude, you have to have the proper attitude. Proper attitude means after the fact. Like we're saying in the Gemara. Or like we just said in Rashi. Meaning, you give tzedakah, you want a particular favor to be done for the tzedakah, but you understand it's not quid pro quo. I'm not doing this so that I can get that. Meaning, I'm doing it. Now, I'd like you to consider the following. If it doesn't happen, I'm fine. But the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, says that if after the fact you say, oh no, I can't believe it. I asked for this to happen, it didn't happen, I want my money back. That's what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is talking about. And that's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that's the wrong attitude. So Tosfos says that basically the difference between what we learned in our Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Dalet, versus the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is basically your reaction to the condition not being met. If your reaction is okay, so then that's good. You're more than good. Sadi gamor. If your reaction is no, that's terrible. How come my condition wasn't met? That's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Okay. There are other ways to resolve the discrepancy between our Gemara and the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Drashas Aran. Okay, I'm not giving proper attribution. I know the Drashas Aran talks about it. But some say that the if you look carefully over here, what happens when you are when you give tzedakah with a condition, you're tzaddik. Anyone who fulfills the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, what is he called? Right, you know where the Gemara refers to that individual, a chassid. And some point out the difference between being a tzaddik versus being a chassid. Chassid is on a higher level than a tzaddik. A tzaddik does what's right. A chassid goes above and beyond what's right. So the So some suggest that the difference over here is between tzaddik versus chassid. Okay, anyway, the interesting discussion, we're back. Back to the Gemara, and the discussion in the Gemara at hand is, how do I know that your Daryav is showered? So, argument number one, that Daryav is showered, is the fact that he did sponsor operating costs in the Beis HaMikdash, but he did so for self-interest. Okay, that's number one. Number two, the Gemara says, I'll give you another proof, a second argument, that he soured. The Pasuk says, we're back in Sefer Ezra, we're in the sixth parak of Sefer Ezra. Nid bachin di evan galal talsa, v'nidbach di a hadat, v'nafkasim in bais malka tisyahev. Okay, again, everyone got that? So the psukim in Ezra here describe that not only was he sponsoring the operating costs of the Beis HaMikdash, but also building. So the capital campaign. And in the building, he actually specified in the psukim that it's going to be three rows of marble and a row of wood. That's going to be the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So lama le David hachei. So the Gemara says, interesting, wood as part of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, why wood? So the Gemara says, Savar e mardu bi Yehudai, iklai benura. So, good. The Jews, if they rebel against me, so their Beis HaMikdash is now going to be 25% made up of wood, I'll burn the Beis HaMikdash. So in other words, part of the reason why he wanted wood to be part of the building of the Beis HaMikdash is that if necessary, he'll burn it. So the Gemara says, Atzur Shlomo lo'av v'hachi v'aksiv. So the Gemara says, now hold on 1 second, slow down. Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the first Beis HaMikdash, also included wood as part of the building. Malachim Aleph, right? The second day in a row, we're quoting from this the sixth parak of Malachim Aleph. Shlosha Torah Gazos V'Torah Karsos Arazim. So, and again, by the way, same percentages. Three rows of marble and a row of wood. So the Gemara says, Shlomo Ava Milamala, Iu Ava Milamata. The Gemara says, well, look, yes, Shlomo added wood as part of the construction, but the wood was on the top, wood was not on the bottom. So the wood was on the top so that Beis HaMikdash wouldn't be burning from the bottom. What Daryavish wanted is wood on the bottom so that if necessary, he'll burn. And now that the wood's on the bottom, so Beis HaMikdash will burn well. I mean, it'll be effective. Shlomo Shake Bevinyana, Iu Lo Shake Bevinyana. And another point to consider is that Shlomo recessed the wood into the wall so that it would be more up to fire code. But what? But when Daryavish put the wood into the walls, the wood was jutting out, so it would burn better. And Shlomo Sajib Basid, Iolo Sajib Basid. And another point to consider is that when Shlomo added wood, he plastered the wood. He put some sort of plaster on top of it again, better for the fire code. When Daryavish put wood, so he exposed the wood, and again, his purpose of doing so is that if necessary, he'll burn the Beis HaMikdash.
Why did Shlomo put wood if he's covering it with the plaster?
I don't know. It could be an engineering point. I don't know.
Well, your house is built.
Three. Point number three. Rav Yosef Itemer Rabbi Yitzchak Minalan Mehacha. So the Gemara says another argument that Daryavish, in fact, soured. So this is a pasuk that we quoted in yesterday's daf. Yesterday's daf, so we pointed out that when Nehemiah was talking with the king, so the king noticed how bad he looked, etc., etc. But part of that, also included in that, was the fact that the queen, the Shagel, was sitting alongside Daryavish. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, all right, I foreshadowed yesterday, and I told you that the word shagel, first of all, the word shagel in of itself, it's not a nice word, right? This is a total anomaly in the Hebrew language, where in the Hebrew language you have a word which is just not a nice word, right? I've quoted to you the Rambam before. You know, Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh. It's called the holy language. So why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? So the Rambam writes in Maror Nevuchim, the reason why Hebrews refer to Lashon HaKodesh is because there is nothing there is nothing explicit mentioned in Lashon HaKodesh. Modern Hebrew, obviously, there are words that were, you know, in other words, it's a language, it's a working language, so they have words that describe everything graphically and explicitly. But if you go back to Lashon HaKodesh, the Torah, in the Lashon HaTorah, so you will not see an explicit reference for going to the bathroom, marital relations. In other words, everything is mentioned, but only by reference, by inference. There are no actual words that describe any of those activities. Nothing wrong with those activities, but there's no words that explicitly describe it. And this is an anomaly. This is like one. I don't know if there's any other such word. By the way, just to make my point, where in the Torah does it mention urination as a word? Okay, don't. Right, everything only by reference. Right, mei raglayim. Right, water of the legs. There's no explicit reference. Excrement in the Torah. Where's the word for excrement in the Torah? Once again, right, soa, right, that which emerges out of your body. There's no actual word for any of these. Any of these, the Rambam says that's why it's referred to as lashon hakodesh. So this is the exception. This is the word shagel. The word shagel. You're going to see in the Tochacha. I know this Shabbos we're reading the Tochacha, but there's another Tochacha coming up. Spoiler alert! At the end of the Torah, Parshas Kisavo. So you'll see the word Shagel. In fact, it's such an explicit word that with the Baal Kori, he doesn't read it. We have a Masara. The Baal Kori doesn't read the word. So we, instead of saying the word Tishagel, we say Tishakavna, right? Instead of Tishagelna. So, but anyway, but basically, it's a reference to relations. So the Shagel Yoshev Etzlo. So he had a shagel that was sitting next to him. This is a reference to Daryavish. Now the Gemara goes on to, we're back to the Gemara. My shagel, what is that a reference to? I'm a Rabba Bar Lima, Mishmei Derav, Kabasa. So you know what it was? It was his dog. Okay? His dog. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Lemishkav. So in other words, so he was involved in bestiality, and he had a specific dog for that purpose. Rashi says, Rashi points out that just simply being a member of humanity. So it's one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. It's included in the Isser of Arayas. Arayas is one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. They're not allowed to engage in illicit relations. Now we have a longer list, right? Our list is found back in Achrei Mos and Parshas Kedoshim. So the b'nei Noach have a much shorter list. Included in their Arayas are only four Isurim. One of the four Yisurim is Behema, Mishkav Behema. So when Rashi over here quotes Shenamar, he goes back to the second parak in Breishis, Vayula Basar Echad. So when Adam and Chava get together, so they are Basar Echad. Yatsa Behema V'chai V'of, Sheinu Nasim Basar Echad, She'en Yoldim in Adam. Now what does that mean, V'yu Basar Echad? So it's interesting. You look at the Mefarshim and Chumash over there. So they have they try to give Psha in terms of what it means that they're going to be one body. Could mean the act of intimacy. But another possibility is Vayuba Labasar Echad, that what's going to happen is that by being intimate with one another, they're going to produce a child. Meaning the union of husband and wife is going to create Basar Echad. It'll create an entity, which means a child. And so the Gemara points out, the Gemara Sanhedrin, Rashi here is quoting it. So the Gemara says that a man and an animal, so they could do the act of copulation, but they're not going to produce a child. Therefore, it's prohibited for a human and an animal to engage in intimacy. So, another argument, this is now the third argument of the Gemara, that Daryavish soured, is because he had a kalba. And that's the shagel that's referenced to in the Navi. Elamiata hadachsev al mara shamayis ramamta ulema anya di besa hayisau karmech va'ant v'ravravanech shageltach ulechanchecha chamra shesin ba'on. So the Gemara says, okay, but now we go to Sefer Daniel, and in Sefer Daniel, once again, there's a reference to the shagel, and in the context of the psukim, the pasuk is describing how they all drank wine, and if the shagel over here is a reference to a dog, the dog drank wine, so the ishagel kabasi kabasa ba mishtai chamrahi, the Gemara says, really, the dog is going to drink wine? And the Gemara says, halokasha demofalei vishtaya. So the Gemara says, yeah. In other words, again, the dog over here was his consort, and so he trained the dog to drink wine, and the dog drank wine. So elamiata dechsev, the Gemara quotes another pasuk. This is from Sefer Tehillim. Benos malachim bikarusech, nitzava shagel yiminech, bikesem ofir. So the daughters of king are honored, and the shagel is standing to the right of the king, bikesem ofir, with jewelry of ofir. Okay, difficult pasuk in Tehillim, and this is Tehillim. A little bit easier to understand. But difficult pasuk in Tehillim, v'ishagel kabasahi, ma'ika mevasil enav l'yisrael. Now, if the shagel over here is a reference to a dog, that's a little bit strange for David HaMelech to praise the Jewish people. You know, you're going to be like the shagel standing to the right of the king. Now, in the context of the way we're understanding shagel, it's really uncomfortable. It's tremendously awkward. We're the female dog. What does that mean? So the Gemara says hachi kamar. So the Gemara says a pshat. Bishar shechaviv atar liyisrael kishagel of the kochavim zachitem lekesem ofir. Okay, that's an interesting pshat, difficult pshat. But as much as the non-Jews like their shagel, so you, the Jewish people, are that committed to Akash Baruch Hu, so you're rewarded with Ketem Ophir, you're going to be rewarded with jewelry. Okay, that's a pshat in the Navi Tehillim. Okay, Ibai Samal Olam Shagel Makasi. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what. It could very well be that the word shagel, look, it's difficult. Meaning to say that shagel is a reference to a dog, the dog's drinking wine, we are being compared to the shagel and the king, it's difficult. So the Gemara says, you know what, let's go back. Let's say that the shagel is actually a reference to the king's wife, consort. Okay, V'rava Barlima Gemara Gemirla. Now Rabba Barlima, who says that Daryavish engaged in bestiality, so he doesn't have a pasuk that points in that direction. He has a tradition. And so if he has a tradition, so why does the Navi in Sefer Ezra refer to this as a shagel? Meaning the word shagel really does mean a queen. It really means his wife. So why is a dog referred to as a shagel? Because he likes the dog as much as he likes his wife. Inami, Shoshiva b'makum shagel. Or the Gemara points out, or maybe just simply where the queen usually sits. So what happens when you visit the palace of Daryavish? What are you going to see by his side? So you're going to see the dog. But in other words, but that's where the queen, that's where the queen should have been. Okay. Adkan. That takes us through the certainly delicate discussion of how we know a third argument, how we know that Daryavish showered and he was engaged in the act of bestiality. The Gemara says, I'll give you another argument. I believe now this is the fourth argument, that we know that he soured. Because Me'acha, we quote now, we're back in Sefer Ezra, we're in the seventh parak. Ad kesef ki karen mea, v'ad chantin koren mea, v'ad chamar bitin mea, v'ad batin mashach mea, u'malach di lok sav. So he overhears again, donating money for the operating cost of the Beis HaMikdash, but what is he doing over here in these psukim? He's capping. In other words, yes, I'll provide operating costs for the Beis HaMikdash so that they can offer karbanos every day, but right. Or in other words, right, there has to be an accounting, and we're capping how much I'm giving. So mikar b'lo kitzusa v'hashta b'kitzusa. So the Gemara says, so what do you see when you first offer to give operating costs without a cap, and now he puts a cap on it? So you see that he's starting to sour. The Gemara says, I don't know if that's such a great proof. The Gemara says, look, I don't know. It could be very well be that he started off by not knowing how much it was going to cost. So he just simply said, but then after learning and knowing how much it's going to cost, so then he put a cap on it. Maybe that could be it. You don't have to necessarily conclude from there that he was bad. So the Gemara says, Ella, Machvar Tikedashim Meikar. So the Gemara says, the arguments we made earlier were better arguments or stronger arguments. Okay, I know that was a lot of daf of today dedicated to the topic of Daryavish and whether or not he soured. The Gemara gave four possible arguments where we see in the Navi that he was started off good, but then he went bad. And the reason why we did so is because at one point his kingdom was being counted from a Nisan perspective, which is Malchei Yisrael, because he was Malchusher. But then at a later point in time, it went to Tishrei because he soured, and that's why the Gemara went on for nearly an entire Amud on the thesis that he soured. Okay, point number two. Again, the Midrashim say it is. The assumption is that, again, we don't know this. The Navi doesn't say it, but we have Midrashim that speak to it. Tosus, yesterday's daf, also says that it is. That's so. So it is fair. It is very fair to speculate. Okay. With all said and done, now we're moving on. This is now point number two of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that when you hit the first day of Nisan, so it's a Rosh Hashanah. It's a Rosh Hashanah for kings. Okay. We spent the last 2.5 blot discussing that. Daf Beis, Daf Gimel, and half of Daf Dalid discuss the first point of the Mishnah. And now we're up to the next point of the Mishnah. That when you hit the first day of Nisan, Rosh Hashanah for Regalim. The first Yantav. So the Gemara says, what is the Mishnah talking about? Regalim Becha Benisanu, Bechamisha Asar Benisanu. What is the Mishnah even talking about? First of all, when you hit the first day of Nisan, that's not Yantav. That's 2 weeks away from Yantav. So what do you mean it's the first Yantav? It's not even Yantav. Now, by the way, it happens to be that in the Haggadah, we say at the Seder night, Yachal Mei Rosh Chodesh. Right? We had a Havamina that we should start saying the Haggadah from the first day of Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so it's not a strong argument, but maybe you can make an argument that really Yontav, you know, at least conceptually begins on the first day of Nisan. Okay, but still, when all is said and done, it's not Yontav. So Amar Rav Chista Regel Shabbat Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim. So the Gemara says, well, it means that when you hit Nisan, you're now hitting the first Yontav, meaning the month which is going to be the first Yontav. That's what the Mishnah means. So the Gemara says, Nafka Mina L'Noder L'Mekem Allah. Excuse me. L'Mekem Allah B'Val Te'achev Rabbi Shimon He. And the Gemara says, and why is that significant? Because you're going to be violating the Isser and the Torah of Bal Te'acher. And that means the following. You make a pledge, right? Even nowadays, we don't have a base of Mikdash. And still, people make pledges and shuls all the time.
We get envelopes.
Right, we get envelopes. We fold the tab. And we're making a pledge. And that's great. However, mind you, that now that you, what you did is you made a neder. So you made a vow. Right, one of the greatest ironies that is practiced today in our religion is that in the same night that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kol Nidre, that every neder that I make should be absolved. What do we do with that very same night? We make a neder. So I don't know how that came about. It's ironic. It's a little bit funny, but okay. But that's Minhag Yisrael. Once you commit yourself to a neder, so now you're on the clock, and if one, two, or possibly three yontifs go by, why am I giving options? Because I know the Gemara coming up. If one or two or three yontifs go by, so we'll be in violation in the Torah of Baal Te'acher. The Torah says, Lo Se'acher L'Shalm Nedro. I paraphrase. I didn't quote the Pasuk accurately. Please forgive me. But right, you have the Pasuk over there? Lo Se'acher L'Shalm Nedro. Okay, don't delay in paying back paying your pledges. Okay, so now the Torah does not delineate at what point in time it's going to be too late. So now what the Gemara is going to tell us is this is the second point of our Mishnah, where the Mishnah is telling us at what point is it going to be too late. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon, our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, Ditanya. So the Gemara here quotes the Braisa, the Tosefta, Echad Anodev, Echad HaMakdish, VeEchad HaMa'arich. Once you make a pledge to give money, either by way of neder, or by sanctifying something, or by giving an erech of something, if you don't know what erech is, so pay careful attention to this week's Parsha. Right after the Tochacha, a couple of mitzvahs end off Sefer Vayikra, and one of them is the mitzvah of erechin, giving somebody's value. Kaven she'avru olav gimel regalim over b'val te'acher. So, according to the Tanakhama of the Braisa, three yantavs go by, you violate the Isser of b'val te'acher. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, gimel regalim, kisidram, v'chaga matzos t'chila. It's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that you have to pass by three yantavs, and furthermore, not by pass by any three yantavs, but three yantavs in order. And when we say in order, what's yantav number one? Pesach. So you could be in Adar, make a neder, and you have now only but 7 months to fulfill your neder. On the other hand, you could be where we are right now, in the month of Iyar. You'll make a neder, and you got plenty of time to pay back your neder. Because you're going to go Shavuos, Sukkos, and the clock hasn't even started. And then you're going to go to next Pesach, and then Shavuos, and then Sukkos. So you'll have over a year to pay back your neder. So the Chag HaMatzos Tchila, that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. V'chenei Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, regalim pa'amim gimel, pa'amim dal, pa'amim chamisha. Sometime it could be three, or four, or even five regalim, ketzad. Ned lefnei ha-Pesach, gimel lefnei ha-Tzeres, chamisha lefnei ha-Chag, arba'a. And the Gemara goes through every scenario that I just described. How you can maybe go over three yontifs, four yontifs, or five yontifs. It all depends on when you made the neder. Tanur Rabban and the Gemara here quotes a Braisa. And now we're going to expose ourselves now to a variety of opinions and when exactly are you violating the Isser of Baal Te'acher. Right now we know of two opinions that we just saw in the previous Tosefta. The Tanakhama says three yontifs, any three yontifs, in any order. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, three yontifs, but in a specific order, specifically Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Now over here the Braisa is going to give us a more expansive discussion on this with how many different viewpoints. You will be surprised how many viewpoints one can imagine. In other words, we say machlokas, but over here, really, it's a major machlokas. Chayave hadamim v'arechem acharamim. So the Gemara talks about different types of pledges. Either a person's market value, or his erech value, or a cherem. A cherem over here means he dedicates something to the Beis HaMikdash. Hekdesh chatos v'shamos. He dedicates an actual item to the Beis HaMikdash. That's hekdesh. Chatos Hashem, that's obviously different karbanos. Olo shlamim, more different types of karbanos. Tzedakos, this is an interesting one. One which we're going to discuss a couple days from now. Tzedakah. Tzedakah is also subject to the prohibition of Baal Te'acher. Keep that in mind. We're going to come back. We're going to discuss that, not today, but Davav. Masros, your Meister obligation. Bechor, Meister, Upesach. Firstborns, your Meister Behema and your Carbon Pesach. Carbon Pesach is an interesting one. How can you violate Baal Te'acher by your Carbon Pesach? Right, the Yontif of Pesach comes around, you bring it, or you don't bring it. And if you don't bring it, you can't bring it next year. It's going to be...
Maybe you
don't have
one that becomes
Shlomo. Okay, so, right, the Gemara is going to discuss that. I'm foreshadowing. Top of Dalam Abayz, Leket Shichacha Peya, and also your responsibility of the produce in your field that needs to go to the poor, the drop grains, the forgotten sheaves, or the corner of your field. Kevin Sha'avar Aleim Shosha Regalim over Bevel Te'acher. So three yontifs go by and you didn't pay, you're in violation of the prohibition of the Torah of Bevel Te'acher. Rabbi Shimon Omer Shosha Regalim Kisadram. Rabbi Shimon says it has to be three yontifs in order. So far so good. Meaning this brisa that we're quoting over here goes over the first two opinions that we saw back in the Tosefta. But here we go. More opinions. I'm sorry. V'chag ha-matzos t'chila. I'm sorry. I should have read that. And Pesach is the first of the three yontifs. Rabbi Meir Omer, this is the third opinion. Kemesh avar aleim regal echad over bevel te'acher. A very machmer opinion of Rabbi Meir, which is one yontif, and you're already in violation of bevel te'acher. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Not three. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer kemesh avar aleim shnei regalim over bevel te'acher. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says two yontifs, and you violate Baal Te'acher. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kevin Sha'avar Aleim Chagasukos, over Aleim Baal Te'acher. So you cross Chagasukos, irrespective of what other yontifs you did or did not pass. Chagasukos is the finality of your, is the deadline for your obligation. You pass by Chagasukos, and you didn't pay, so you're in violation of Baal Te'acher.
He's going against his father.
Ostensibly, right? Always hard to understand, but yes. So my time at the Tanakhama. So the Gemara now, okay? So that was a brisa, and that recorded for us no less than five opinions in terms of when you violate Baal Te'acher. Just as a note, our Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which is a Stam Mishnah, is going like the position of Rabbi Shimon, which is interesting because usually Stam Mishnah goes like Rabbi Meir.
There's a discrepancy between when he's starting with the Arbosh Roshanas, and he goes, but according to there's actually three.
Correct. So the so my time at the Tanakama Mirti Minayu Salak Lama Lamahadra Umirti. So the Gemara now we'll go through a little bit of this Gemara. This is going to take us well into tomorrow's daf, but let's start it off. Right? What's the understanding behind each opinion? So first we go through the Tanakama. Tanakama says that you have to pass by three yantavs. Well, how do I know that? Because you go to Parshas Re'eh. Parshas Re'eh, we lay in every Yontif, here in Chutz La'aretz. Because the last day of every Yontif, the last day of Pesach, last day of Shavuos, last day of Sukkos, we're always laying Parshas Re'eh. So we see this Psukim on every Yontif, the tail end of every Yontif. So, Chaga Sukkos, Chaga Shavuos, Chaga Matzos, Chaga Shavuos, Chaga Sukkos, Shema Minah, Lebal Te'acher. The Torah already tells us that with the three Yontifs. And then it enumerates the three yontifs. Why is it enumerated? To tell us that if I pass by these three yontifs, having not paid my pledge, I'm in violation of Baal Te'acher. Rabbi Shimon Omer Einu Tzarech Lomar B'Chagasukos Shabo Dibra Akasim. So Rabbi Shimon says, look, the Torah ended its discussion of Sukkos. Meaning, if you go through the Pesukim in Re'eh, you'll see that the last thing discussed is Chag HaSukkos, and Lama Namar Lama Shezeh Acharon. So why mention, if Sukkos is already being discussed, so why do the Torah have to repeat Sukkos again to tell us that Sukkos is the last Yontav? So in other words, this is Rabbi Shimon explaining that it has to be three Yontavs in order. Rabbi Meir, my time dechsiv avat shama ve'evesim shama. Rabbi Meir says that you only pass one Yontav and you're in violation of Balte Acher. How does he know that? Because the Torah says, Ubasa Shama, you'll go there, meaning Aliyah L'Regel, Ve'evesim Shama, and you'll bring your pledges with you. V'Rabbanan, so I'm sorry, so that's a proof for the Shita of Rabbi Meir, which is one Yontav goes, comes and goes, and you're in violation of Balte Acher. V'Rabbanan, now the Chachamim, who obviously don't agree, they say three Yontavs, what are they going to do with that Pasuk? Hahu Le'asei. There are two separate mitzvahs in the Torah. There is a positive commandment to bring your pledge to Yerushalayim, and then there's a negative prohibition if failure to do so. The positive commandment begins on Yontav number one. The negative prohibition only kicks in after the third. Rabbi Meir came into Amar Le Rachmana Aisi Velo Aisi Mimela Kamle Babalte Acher, and Rabbi Meir says, I'm not disagreeing with you. There's a positive commandment, and there's a negative prohibition, but they are linked. They are connected. Once you violate the positive commandment, now you're subject to the negative prohibition. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, my time adichsiv. Now we're up to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. This is the fourth opinion, which is that if you pass by two yontivs, you're subject to the prohibition of Balte Acher. So how does he arrive at that conclusion? So, Eilat Asul Hashem b'mo'adeichem. This is what you're going to do on your yontivs. In the plural. What do we know? The rule is Miut Moadim Shnayim. That once we talk in plurality and we don't know what the number is, so we always assume it's the smallest number, which is two. So the Chachamim say, no, I need that pasuk. That pasuk is dedicated for a different halacha. The halacha of Rabbi Yona. Dama Rabbi Yona, Hukshu Kulam Moadim Kulam Zelazeh. All the yontifs are connected to one another. Shekula Mechaprim Atumas Mikdash Vikadashav. The purpose of Karbanos on Yontifs is to provide an atonement for the possible transgression, the violation of somebody walking into the Beis HaMikdash Tameh, not being aware of his Tumah. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, my time at Ditanya. Now we're up to the final opinion, which is Rabbi Elazar, son of Rabbi Shimon. What's behind his opinion? Ditanya, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amar lo yomar chag asukah shabot dibra kasuf, lama namar lomar shezeh goreim. Sukkos is the goreim, it's the causative. Once you go by Sukkos and you don't bring your neder, you're in violation of Balte Acher. Good? We finished the discussion today of Daryavesh. We recounted that Daryavesh started off good and then soured. The Gemara gave four arguments to explain how where we see evidence to that. We moved on to the next point of the Mishnah. The next point says that Nisan is the Yontif of the Rosh Hashanah for Yontifs, for Regalim. What does that mean? The prohibition of Balte Acher. And our Mishnah accords with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And we saw the second half of today's daf, that in addition to Rabbi Shimon, there are four other opinions in amongst the Tanaim, exactly when we violate the Isser of Balte Acher.